Igor Ligoshevstov in Sydney finally gets in touch with his brother Alexander in war-torn Kharkiv.
Алло, алло.
Да-да-да, приветик.
Ну, ты чё не берёшь трубку?
Ukraine's second largest city has been the target of ongoing airstrikes which have damaged more than 600 buildings, including apartment blocks and schools, since the start of Russia's invasion 3 weeks ago. Alexander has been conscripted in Ukraine's army as a reservist, as of all men in the country between the ages of 18 and 60. He says so far Ukraine's troops have kept Russian soldiers out, but the impact from the aerial strikes has everyone on edge.
In Kharkiv at the moment, as of yesterday, 600 houses were either on fire or were damaged. More than 600 houses were hit. Tanks can't enter into Kharkiv thanks to the fantastic actions of the military. Everyone already understood that it would be difficult to enter Kharkiv. It can only be aviation and cruise missiles.
For Igor, it's been nerve-wracking knowing how much danger his brother is in, someone with no previous military experience and who now confronts the prospect of fighting.
Yeah, that's been difficult emotionally, for sure. I always thought that I'm a strong guy, but I can't sleep. I just sleep maybe 3-4 hours.
His wife, Eva Belinska, has also lost sleep, trying but failing to convince her mum and dad to leave Kharkiv.
Yeah, it's still not safe. One day we have decided, like, could you please just call when you wake up? And right now my mom's not calling. So I just thinking about today is great. Maybe she called a little bit later. But yeah, it's too difficult. I feel empty. Just for 3 weeks, I lost approximately 50 kilograms. 15, sorry. I can't sleep. I can't eat.
A survivor of World War II, Igor's 83-year-old mother, Valentina Likoshevstov, found herself once again fleeing war. She's now arrived in Australia, leaving everything behind. It was a long journey only made possible with the help of friends and acquaintances in Poland and the Australian government. She says the journey started with boarding a packed train to travel more than 20 hours west towards Lviv and then onward to Poland.
In Kharkiv, we stood in line at the station all day because there were a lot of people leaving and the trains couldn't cope with this flow. At 6 o'clock, we departed to Lviv. As soon as we began to depart, the plane flew by and there was an explosion. People, of course, started to panic. Children, parents with children were on the train. The train was overloaded, 12 people in each compartment. People sat on the floor, in the hallway. We arrived at Lviv, then we took a bus to Poland. The bus stood at the border for a long time, and I arrived in Warsaw at about 4 in the morning. At night, without the language, in a foreign country.
After a tense week of ensuring his mum's safe passage to Australia, Igor is relieved she's here, but now wants to help her to recover. That's been made more difficult with the restrictions attached to the tourist visa. There's no ability to work or access medical treatment on Medicare. Igor says one of the first things he'll be doing is to ensure her dental work, which was interrupted by the conflict, is resumed.
We're grateful to government that they really made the, you know, the priority to get Ukrainians here. But the visa type is tourist, it's a 600. It means there's no protection here. Like we bought the medical insurance, of course, but medical insurance covers very little. So if something happens and we need to go to ED or we need to see even see GP and you know, the bill can go into thousands very quickly, very easily. So that would be really good to have Medicare or similar scheme developed for Ukrainian displaced people.
With government support so far unavailable, community groups are joining together to fill the gap. Ina Mishelman in Melbourne has been running a Facebook group to help newly arrived Ukrainians with accommodation and other needs. She did not anticipate the scale of how much help is needed.
It exploded in a few days. It's now standing at 2,100 people. Last time I looked, but it could be more now. And all of these people are joining the group saying, how can we help? What can we do? But there's a lot of Australians also who've joined the group, who are offering their homes and offering money to help pay for tickets for them to come across, etc. So it's been an incredible response, very overwhelming.
She says what is clear is the restrictions attached to the tourist visa is causing a lot of stress on families hosting up to 12 new arrivals.
What's happening is I'm inviting my friend, but she's coming with her partner, their three children, his elderly parents, their neighbour and her best high school friend. Not many people can accommodate that sort of thing, if you know what I mean. So we're getting overwhelmed and we really need other people to be able to take them on and put them up in their homes and show them around and give them psychological help. I mean, they're coming from war zones where, you know, they either lost everything or their city has been bombed or they've been through hell.
She says she's received requests for help in a wide range of areas, including the ability to work, access to Medicare, the ability for kids to attend school and help to learn English. Asylum Seeker Resource Centre Director Jana Favero says Australians have been contacting the organisation, offering to provide help, including opening their homes, donating food and blankets, and offering English classes.
It's one of the great things about the Australian spirit is we really do step up when people are in need. And even though we've had COVID, we've had flood situations, and there is so much going on in the world. There was, you know, 7 months ago, the fall of Afghanistan. So there is a lot of need. It's just very confusing as to how we can best navigate and generate and direct all those offers of help.
She says the government should move quickly to set up a hotline with translators to provide simple information on settlement needs.
We've had phone calls of people saying to us, what do we do about our visa? What do we do about our family? What do we do about accessing education? What do we do about accessing medicine? And I've made phone calls, I've sent emails, and it's been so hard to get any accurate information as to how people fleeing Ukraine as refugees when they arrive in Australia, what they can and can't access. So even just having a dedicated hotline with translators that people could call to find out how they could access those services.
The federal government has indicated it's considering introducing a temporary safe haven program, like that offered to refugees from Kosovo in 1999. It would offer access to work and healthcare. Biwa Kwan, SBS News.